Stephanie and Sam here. I mean, the introducer. So in terms of our session today, in the Bay Area, thousands of American children are traded for sex by pimps. And women and men are trapped in a life of slavery in homes, motels, massage parlors, and other establishments lining the streets of San Francisco and nearby cities. They are among the estimated 12.3 million slaves in the world today, according to the TIP report, U.S. State Department, 2010. Until the American public embraces human trafficking as our issue, the war against human trafficking globally and domestically will see little victory. We see it as a horrible problem in those other countries. It's their issue. To win, human trafficking has to move from niche knowledge to mainstream knowledge. So in this session, we'll discuss the reality in our urban and suburban neighborhoods from someone who patrols our streets. We'll talk about how human trafficking can be flourishing in the progressive, socially conscious Bay Area. And we'll also talk about what California Against Slavery is doing to make human trafficking a mainstream issue and the riskiest criminal enterprise in California. So a bit about our speakers. Daphne Fung is executive director and founder of California Against Slavery. Daphne was appalled that trafficking victims suffered further victimization in our legal system. She started California Against Slavery in 2009 to bring the issue to 17 million people who have the power to legislate change. To pay her bills, Daphne works in finance and accounting. She has a BA from Reed College in Portland and an MBA from Mills College, Oakland. Sam Figueroa has been a police officer since 1996. He's gained experience and knowledge in human trafficking by his numerous contacts with the commercially sexually exploited victims and with the pimps who exploit them. Sam spent 4 years as a patrol officer in one of NYPD's most notorious districts in Brooklyn. From New York to California, Sam recognizes prostitution as human trafficking as it is occurring on our streets. He's passionate about educating the public and his colleagues about human trafficking. In doing so, he hopes to target pimps and exploiters of the commercially exploited victims in America. So without further ado, join me in welcoming Daphne and Sam.
That's so tall. All right, thanks for coming, and thank you, Freedom Summit, for having us here. This is going to be a very engaging session, so we're going to keep you awake this whole time. I know it's at the end of the day. So the first thing we're going to do is, we have a brain teaser here, and there's a point to it at the end, and you'll find out. So the brain teaser is that the bathtub is overflowing, and the water is flooding the floor of your friend's bathroom. Next to the tub, you see a spoon, a cup, and a bucket. What would you reach for first? All right, can you speak louder?
The faucet.
The faucet. You want to turn off the water first, right? So, you understand the point later on. But yes, that makes more sense, right? You want to stop the water from coming out. You want to stop the inflow first, and then you take care of the problem after that, right? So human trafficking is a criminal business that profits from enslaving people for sexual servitude or forced labor. The statistics, as you probably heard 10 times today, there are 12.3 million slaves in this world, and this is the latest figure. You've probably heard 27 million before, or I even heard 30 million. So this is the most conservative number, and because I have a finance background, I do a number crunching for a living, you tend to go with the more conservative number so that you know you're safe, right, with that number. 80% of women and children, 50% of children, and 70% of women trafficked offer sexual servitude. It's a $32 million industry, and it's the second and largest growing criminal industry in the world. It's in the United States, it's the second source of income for local gangs, and this is according to police from San Diego to San Francisco. Now, domestically, and this is something that doesn't get talked about at all, much at all, where we hear about the 17,000, up to 17,000 people being brought here as slaves from other countries, but there are over 100,000 American minors who are trafficked for sex every year, and this is the most conservative number that they can find, and the high end is 300,000, but it could be anywhere, right? So so we have a lot of quizzes for you. So the first one is, which area ranks number one in the United States for child sex trafficking, according to the FBI's latest study in 2003? Is it Las Vegas? Is it the San Francisco Bay Area? Los Angeles, New York City, or Miami? So let me repeat those choices again. Vegas, San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles, New York City, or Miami? Okay, who says Vegas? All right, San Francisco Bay Area? Los Angeles? New York City? Miami? So the answer is Los Angeles. But you guys are not too far away from the San Francisco, though. So according to the FBI, number one is San Francisco. And San Francisco is number seven. Number eight is San Diego. So of the 100,000, at least 100,000 minors who are being trafficked for sex, you know that a majority of them are coming here or have been through here, because we harbor three of the top 10 sex trafficking areas in the nation. Actually, I'm going to stop there, and I want Sam to come and do. He has an activity that he wants you to be involved with.
Activity, yeah.
And he's going to share. Sam has such a passion for our children who are being trafficked for sex.
Mostly angry.
And angry. But what's great about him, the reason I invited him to be part of this session is that he's a patrol officer. He is as close to these victims on a daily basis as you can get when they're out there already, right? So I want him to share his personal testimony, but I know he has an activity that he wants to involve you in. Go ahead, Sam.
You probably want to be in the mic because they're recording.
I talk loud, right? You guys can hear me? First thing what I want is I intentionally tried to hand out those cards to as many men as possible. The unfortunate aspect is, or the reality is, that men, we are the consumers, right? We get rid of that, we get rid of the problem. So tell your friends, tell as many people as you can, your children. No. You hear about it, people joking about it. It's no. Stay away from it. Don't do it. What I want to do is, starting from the front to back, if I handed you a card, and if you can't read it, understand that this is a difficult topic. I'm not educated, college professor. I barely got high school. So a lot of things that I talk about is a little gritty. A lot of things that I'm exposed to at the street level, the people that I come in contact with, they don't use pretty words, and it's not a pretty crime to investigate. So it's graphic, and it's horrible, and it's nightmarish sometimes to even understand that it's happening to these beautiful children. I'm just going to ask, maybe before we do that, is maybe two or three people, maybe seven being the youngest years of age, if you can. I know you're going to college, the kid in a suit right there, right? See, I listen when I'm walking around. At 7 years old, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be a history teacher.
7 years old?
Well, I mean,
at seven? How about like a fire engine or something fantastic? Look for dinosaurs. I wanted to look for dinosaurs. I was expecting an astronaut or something. I'd be a professor. Awesome. So you want to be a superstar. At 7 years old, most children you ask that question, it's going to be something fantastic. No child that you ask wants to be in this life. I don't care where you go on this planet, in this world. No child that you ask what you want to be when you grow up are ever going to say that they want to be a victim of any type of crime, let alone this kind of crime. So understand that. So anybody tells you that these women, sometimes men, sometimes little boys, want to be in this life, I can't say on the mic what you should do, but They're not making sense because it's not a reality. It's not a truth. They're living in a fantasy land and trying to explain that to them. So first, what I want to do, I guess secondly, is if you have a card, stand up nice and loud, say your name, and then you're going to say what you've experienced. And these are actual victims. I've changed the names. These are actual things that have happened to victims. I've minimized the amount of cards. Could actually fill thousands of these rooms with cards and people with these victims that are actually experiencing these things and more horrible experiences. So I want you to see these people who, as they are, as victims, and I've changed the names, obviously, to protect some of them. But these are actual victims. So from the front to back, if you could stand up with your card, starting with my colleague over here, and say your name and read your experience, please. Nice and loud.
Vanessa, I am 16 when my pimp locks me in the closet and beats me with an extension cord.
Stay up, stay up. I didn't say sit down. Come on, come on. You already ruined the class. Come on. Thanks.
Andrea, I've been in the life since I was 15. My ex-pimp issues a hit on me. My new pimp, who is working with my old pimp, uses the money I make to pay the hitman.
Stay standing. Next, please.
My name is Alex. I'm 11. And when my pimp whips me, my entire back with a belt buckle, the beating leaves permanent scars.
Okay. Stay standing, please.
Kimberly, I am 15 when my John holds me at gunpoint and beats me for hours.
I'm Chanel. I was 16 when my body is found wrapped in a trash bag inside of a dumpster. I was strangled. My murder has never been solved.
I'm Carla. I'm 13 when I'm gang raped by four men in the parking lot of a strip club.
Julia, I'm 16 when my pin douses me with alcohol and sets me aflame. My murder has never been solved.
Misha, if you got a card, stand up.
Allegra, I'm 15 when my pimp beats me so badly I permanently lose sight in my left eye.
Tiffany, I am 16 when I'm found floating face down in a lake. My murder has never been solved.
I am 16 when my pimp locks me in the basement and beats me every day for 2 months.
Before me, anyone? Still here? Anyone? Anyone back here?
I'm Mama Shell. I am 15 when I am repeatedly kicked and stomped on by more than 10 pimps at once.
Anybody over here? I saw him.
I'm Ashley. I'm 17 when I'm gang raped by five men, stabbed in my vagina, and left in the street to die.
I'm Terry, and I'm 13 when I am arrested and injured by alcoholism.
Thanks.
I'm Chanel. I'm 16 when I am held down at gunpoint, the weapon is aimed between my legs while my pimp carves his name into my thigh with a box.
He changed the wording on that, just so you know. I had something different. I appreciate that. Go ahead and stand up.
Annabelle, I am 14 when a John stabs me repeatedly. I need more than 100 stitches.
Next. Nice one.
Samantha, I am 15 when my John shoves a gun in my mouth and threatens to kill me.
I'm Crystal. I am 16 when I am suffocated. My murder has never been solved.
Anybody else? Back here? Nice one.
Oh, yeah. I am 14 when my kid beats me and cuts off my hair as a punishment.
Anybody else? Now, I want all of you to look around and understand that I don't have enough cards to hand out, and I never will. These are real women, these are children, these are people in your community. Some will never know who did this. And they're just a car stop away from me finding them. So, if you're angry, get more angry. So, all my victims have a seat. And that's the feeling I have every day when I deal with these pimps. I got all jacked up. Get me angry, I get riled up. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, family moved from Puerto Rico. The 83rd precinct was notorious for crime. Predominantly Puerto Rican community, Dominican, South American, African American. Plagued with heroin, crime, and then later on through the 80s, crack cocaine. Dysfunctional families was a norm. Myself, I didn't have a dad. After 4 years old, he's gone. So the abuse through the community is rampant. Nobody sees that inside of the community. But as a young Latino male, I'm walking up and down my stairs and I'm seeing girls servicing men in the hallways of where I live. So it's a normal way of life for me as a boy, as the people that I grew up with. Walking up and down the streets, you see these men and women. The brothels were obvious to all of us, but as a young Latino male, it's a way of life for all of us. It was nothing that we could do, and obviously the cops weren't doing anything. Elizabeth Figueroa, no relation of mine, who used to walk to school with me, she was one day not walking to school with me because she was snatched off the streets by a couple of guys in a van, and a couple of days later she was found raped and murdered in a cemetery. Nobody ever found out who did that to her. So that kind of life is where I came from, and there's a lot of other horror stories I can tell you of. And I can try and reason it away like most people do, but the reality is when I become a man, I go to the Marine Corps and find a different way of life that not everybody's living in this way. So I come back to work in that same community, and I see the very same people that I grew up with, either in prison or they're in jail or hooked up on crack and all kinds of other nonsense. And we're given a directive in the 7-5, not a written directive, but a kind of an oral rule, stay out of that area where these girls are working. And it was like a circus over there. These cars were driving around in circles, and it's like in the movies, these women are dressed scantily. But patrol, we can't deal with that because we're dealing with homicide shootings and priority calls. So that was not a priority for us. So as a young cop, as a young boy, we didn't deal with it. So still blind. Still not seeing. Years later, I came to the West Coast for whatever reason. And I had to change my way of doing work because I used to tell Mandy this, speak what I'm thinking. And then my boss is like, you didn't really say that to that lady, did you? Or to that man? Or yeah, I said that. California's a little funny that way. You can't say what you're thinking. So... came out here, anyway, come down to the bare facts. Just pass these back, if you can. I'll come back to the books later, just pass them around, or you can look through them. Those are my books, and I'm going to stop you at the door, so don't walk out with them. I was exposed to this over and over again, the missing children, the runaways, the wrong word, prostitution, as you've heard today a couple of times, they're commercially, sexually exploited children, victims. Not prostitutes, over and over again. And it's still not the directive, but it's still the ignorance of patrol throughout the nation that it's a problem. If you stop a runaway child, it's like half your shift is done. And then what are you going to do with her? You got no place to put her. You got no resources. I talked to you about it, right? So what do? You go to Ansel, the shots fired, the robbery, and you just keep driving that area. And you see these victims because you're going to something else more important. But if you can change the idea of the patrolman at the patrol level, because the glory arrest is the guns, the drugs, you got to find that gang member. Because that's a good arrest. You bring that on, your boss is happy. And your patrol partners are happy because you're bringing that off the street. But if you can change the mentality, is what I've been trying to do and what I have been doing, is that pimp is your gang member, does have the gun, and has the drugs. And he also has a victim. Sometimes what I've seen, personal cases here in agency that I've worked in, is as young as 14, 15. So we change that mentality. It's an awesome arrest, and you also save a life, these young girls. Actual case experiences, if you don't mind me, I could talk forever, so she has to shut me down. Partner calls me over because I'm a little creative. Hey, Sam, I got this. What I believe to be a pimp, what do I do? So I talked to him in a creative fashion. And he explains to me that there's other girls in the near vicinity. And I locate those two girls. They happen to be juveniles. One of them who was recently recruited. I snatch the phones right away and I connect them to the pimp. So now I have the arrest of the pimp. And because these girls are young and new in the life, they're easier to talk to and to deal with. Understand, if I'm dealing with someone that's 18, she's already a veteran in the life of many years. She doesn't want to even talk to me. Right. So, but you get them young, like the pimp's thinking, let's get them young so we can manipulate them. Same thing. If we catch these girls young and get there young and realize when they're new, we can help them. So the girls work with me and the family to go back and identify suspects that they have had sex with. Then I go back and make the arrest for having sex with a minor. And if you happen to be here illegally, I get somebody else involved. So yeah, we can be creative at the patrol level. We can do different things and impact the community. Now that community, which happens to be a certain community in my neighborhood, that spreads like wildfire. Holy cow, that cop with the mustache is out of control. And that's the reputation I got, and I always keep it that way. We need to help these girls. The cases go on and on. I'll be driving down the street, and you're talking about a marked police vehicle. I got to hide that car. I put branches on it and camouflage it. Boss is always wondering, why was your car always coming back dirty? Because I, you know, threw trash bags on it. So, same thing. Girl walking down the street. I know what she's doing. Now I got to look for the guy. I got to hunt because I know he's nearby. Nevada plate. First clue. Doesn't take a genius. It's in Concord. What are you doing from Nevada? So I don't usually get out of the car when I talk to the girls. I lean out the car. Hey, what's up? What's going on? And they're kind of cool when I'm not out of the car. They get nervous when I walk out. And they're all trouble. So they give me a lot of info when I'm in the car. Where you from? I'm from Vegas. I'm from here. I'm from there. And obviously a fake name. So then I get enough to make the arrest, but I still download the vehicle mentally for later, which I noticed there's a water bottle outside of the vehicle that's filled with urine. What's that tell you? Anybody? He's been there a while. He's staking out. He's sitting there. Doesn't take a genius. It's not that hard. So after I get her in custody, she's got warrants from God knows where. That's just my boyfriend. I go talk to him. He's out of Louisiana. I don't know that girl. Well, creativity. Phone connects to phone. I search the car because I got probable cause to do so after the arrest, et cetera, et cetera. I find a bus ticket that he purchased for her from Las Vegas to Oakland. So you tell me now that there's no connection. So now I got him. I got his car. I got his cash, cell phone, computers, et cetera. Then I hand it to detectives. They're like, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing out there? But it's doable at my level. It's doable at your level because you can call your local agency and call them. Just say, hey, man, there's something suspicious about this house, these people. And if there's shots fired and robberies and other things going on, unfortunately, we're going to respond to that first. But you're going to get that officer that's going to go out there and, like in other cases, like this recent Fremont case, that is going to make a difference and save some lives.
So, you know, I have a question.
Go ahead.
A couple of questions for you. The first one is, you mentioned you were talking to me about the Charles Manson case, right?
Okay.
So can you share a little bit about your thoughts on that case?
I handed out the books. That was good you hit on that, because I handed out some books. There's Pimpology 101. There's actual pimp that tells how we can go about pimping. And there's mass murderer books, our famous mass murderers. Most of your serial killers have been Johns at one point. So I was telling somebody earlier, I'm just a car stop away from catching one of these guys. Because that's who's praying after these women. And I have all these PowerPoints. If you guys email me, I'll send you all kinds of stuff. But Charles Manson, for instance, was a pimp before all these incidents occurred that hit mainstream media, where it hit, you know, America. He was arrested for the Mann Act. He was a pimp, and he honed his craft in jail, how to manipulate, because he was assaulted and abused, and he learned how to manipulate people And he was prostituting people, women, children that came from awesome lives, bought them into his life, and then they went on to, obviously, till this day, they were still in the news. These are pimps. Had the laws been stricter back then, had the people seen what it is back then, none of those horrible things would have happened. And even till now, people all over the world, you hear, there's a recent case, talking 10, 15 years of a man that was just driving through the prostitution areas, just grabbing these women, dragging them, and killing them with a ball-peen hammer. And the unfortunate thing, not just them, but he was grabbing innocents. They're all innocent, but he was grabbing normal people, your squares, that were just coming to and from home, but because they happened to be in that area, this animal was taking these people and murdering them just as well. So Don, when you see the track, you have to understand, you don't have just your pimp, your drug dealer, your rapist, your murderers. You have these also these predators that are out there looking and hunting for these women. Why? Because none of you, none of us, none of society is going to miss them. The Garrido case. Who's from Concord? Anybody? The Garrido case. Think about now, if anybody's realized this, I've heard it in the media, law enforcement has to backtrack. Because where he was working years ago, there was prostitutes found murdered. Mm. 20 years ago or so. So think about that officer's mentality back then when they found these women who worked the streets. Did they really investigate those cases? I'm not taking anything away from what they did, but you have to realize what was the mentality back then if it's the way it is now. Had they did what they had to do and hunt this animal down back then, this child would have been lived a normal life with her family. So think about that when somebody tells you they're out there voluntarily. Think about the victims that were standing up. Think about the patrol officers that are out there that you say, oh, they're just driving by it. Some of us can't stop. Some of us will. But we need you guys to call us. She knows. I'm always emailing her all kinds of stuff. She's got a special file at trash mail. I'm in her spam box. She just puts me... If you email me, I'll send you stuff. I'll send you the PowerPoints that I have. I have information that I've gone to Seattle. I've met with their task force. I've met with the task force from Canada. These are people that are being just as creative with little resources that they have. They're doing fantastic things. I've met people from Georgia, from New Mexico, people that are, you know, angry just as I am. And we need the community to become just as angry and outraged and to help these little girls and help them get away from these animals. The other thing is, again, stricter laws. If you make some of the crimes that are now misdemeanors felonies, I have a lot more power. The human trafficking law has given me that power to find that pimp, track him down, take his car, take his cell phone, take his cash. If that's all I get, I'm happy because I've disrupted his night. The reality is when that girl gets out, she's going to go right back to him. So I need people like you, resources, community resources for these women. Some girls I've had so young that I called rape crisis and they said, that's not a rape. We're not going to come out. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's not our protocol.
Call me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's different, the mentality, if we could change that. I've spoke to different people about it and they're looking to change that. So some people I've had to 5150, and if anybody knows that what that is, I think if this girl goes back out into the street, she's a danger to herself. She's going to get killed. So I send her to the hospital, unfortunately. I don't send her to juvenile hall, but I send her to the hospital. I can't cut her loose to Child Family Services because now Family Services is in danger because she's got to drive her by herself, and her pimp may be following, and this girl's just as dangerous. So we have to be creative. We all have to be creative. And my card's up here. She makes fun of me because how many have I handed out? Too many. I hand them out. I don't answer my... If you leave me a message, you're never going to hear from me. Email me at the business, and I'll give you my private email, then I'll send you the PowerPoints, the information, links, people that are interested, people that are just as angry. And if you're in Concord and I'm not too busy and you represent yourself as an organization, I'm hoping to get some other people out, I'm not going to name names, come out and ride and you can see firsthand. If I'm not on a call, I'll take you to the areas that, and we may get lucky and save a life that night. And you can see how I do it firsthand.
Thank you, Sam.
You want me to shut up?
Yeah. Great.
Sam, I'll go on a ride with you. And I'm going to bring a friend, too. All right. So, you know, Sam is one of the few police officers I've met who are so passionate about this because he learned about this through one of the Jams videos. Because before that, he, like everybody else, thought, it's not a big issue. Who cares, right? So this is what we need to do is to change the mentality. If we can actually even just change their mentality of how our police do our work and how they see these people, these victims, it would drastically change the issue. So I want to ask you guys, why is California such a magnet for traffickers? Can you guys throw something out? Why?
You can work 24 hours on the street here without hardly. I mean, the weather is beautiful here.
Okay, it's nice
that's
weather.
That's one of the reasons.
Okay.
Money.
Money, yes. Ports of entry, yes. Anyone else? Yes.
It's very good for migrant workers in the Colorado Valley.
Okay, so we have a huge huge farming industry. Yes.
We've got a lot of technology, like we've got a cell phone, internet access,
okay. Good technology, we're highly connected, right? Easily connected. Anyone else? Yeah, we got a culture that actually glorifies the whole pimping industry, right? So, yeah, you know, it comes down to three words, right? Opportunity, 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 right? So California has lots of opportunities. We got lots of money, lots of points of entry, lots of people, lots of demand. And so it comes down to this large opportunity and little risk. That's what it is, right? So human trafficking is in California and in the U.S. And the reason we're still talking about human trafficking or modern-day slavery today, like Condoleezza Rice said yesterday, let's call it for what it is. It's modern slavery. And the reason we're still talking about it 150 years after Abraham Lincoln is because human trafficking is driven by greed. It's enabled by weak laws. And here I have a picture of a scale. So you can see the money is really good and the risk is very little. So like Charmaine Bach said, why not, right? This is that's the biggest bang for your buck. So traffickers and slave traders, pimps, whatever you call them, they are opportunists. And California has lots of opportunities. So you go where the money is, you go where the opportunity is. The last thing the last reason that it's flourishing in California is because it's sustained by public unawareness or misconception. So our concept of slavery in our minds is pictures of men, black men in chains, and a white plantation owner whipping them, right? So that's the public image of slavery today. But slavery has modernized, like our society has. And modern-day slavery is a very different picture. It could be any race, and it could be man or woman, although it's mainly a woman, females. It could be in any industry, right? So here's another quiz to get your minds juiced up. So which one is the largest? Okay. So is it which one is the largest number, right? So A, is it the number of active Twitter users in the U.S., 2, the populations of Washington, Arizona, and Arkansas combined, or 3, is it the number of registered voters in California? So who said it's A, number of Twitter users? Oh, most of you guys. B, the combined population of Washington and Arizona and Arkansas, no one? C, number of registered voters. So the answer is C. So actually, the most reliable number I've seen for Twitter users is a global number. It's actually 10 million to 15 million people are active users globally. So I'm like I said, I'm conservative, so I say US. The population of Washington is of Washington, Arizona, and Arkansas combined is 16 million people. But there are 17 million registered voters in California. Wow. We're a big state. We got a lot of people, and we got a lot of we have a lot of the issues because of that. All right, so you know, right now we kind of talked about the issue and how huge it is and what a big part California has in it. And the 17 million, I'm trying to imagine what it means to have 17 million people, right? Because I do numbers, but I can't imagine numbers. So what I did was, let's imagine we have a forum like this. This is a great forum. And we have 2,000 people every day. And we have an event every day with new people every day. So there's no overlapping people. It would take us 23 years to reach 17 million people. Okay, so over two decades. Now let's imagine one initiative, November 6, 2012, one day, you can get 17 million people on this issue. What we're doing here in this forum, and in many forums to come, I hope, is that we're promoting activism. But this is an epidemic, right? So like the AIDS epidemic, and what are the different epidemics? What do we need? We need a movement, right? Right. You have activists, we have ACE activists, but we need a movement to really make big change. And this is an epidemic issue. I mean, it's the second largest criminal industry globally and in our country as well. So what we need is a movement, and that's what California Against Slavery is trying to do, is we're trying to create a movement here, starting in the biggest state in our nation. So California was birthed in Fremont and at my dining table down the street. So our mission is to defend the freedom of every child, woman, and man by empowering the people of California to fulfill our obligation to abolish human trafficking. And, you know, we do that in a very practical way. So Our plan is to put initiative on the ballot in 2012 to enact just and effective laws to protect victims and to prevent and prosecute human trafficking. In doing so, California will lead our nation in a historical movement to end human trafficking. And you know, as the biggest state, we can do that. Do you guys have, actually, we can leave questions for the end. All right, I have the next one. The next question for you guys is how long does the California Constitution allow to collect the required signatures to qualify the initiative? So you know that to put an initiative on the ballot, you need physical signatures from registered voters. So we need about 700,000 signatures, over 700,000 signatures. So is it unlimited time to get the signatures? 2 months, a year, 5 months, or none of the above? Wow, you guys are paying, some of you guys are good. 5 months, right? So we get 5 months to do this, and that's why we've learned that from our first round that we need a lot of volunteers, a lot of people, but we also need a huge financial support that we can get people out there on a daily basis to collect signatures. Our plan is very ambitious, trying to create this movement of 17 million people, but it's very doable. And we know from all the political experts we talked to that if we get this on the ballot, the voters of California will do the right thing. But we just have to give them the opportunity to empower them to do the right thing. And if you know from the last election that you know, Californians, as Californians, we vote with our hearts, not just with our wallets. And I think this is going to be a huge movement that we need to create, that we can create and generate in our state. So what our plan is, right? We need to raise $1 million by November 2011 so that we can put this initiative on the 2012 ballot, the presidential one, the one our president's gonna be on. That's gonna generate, involve 17 million registered voters to bring awareness and justice to against slavery. And that cost basically, if you look at the numbers, I'm a finance person, I look at costs all the time. It would cost less than 6 pennies per voter. So if you're handing a flyer to every 17 million people, like really ugly black and white flyer, you know, That would cost you more money than if you put this on the ballot. Okay. So California against slavery as a finance person is the best investment for change in our state. I'm going to stop there for a little while. So that's a lot of information, right? A lot of numbers. And do you guys have any questions at this point? Oh, this. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
We'll post them on the California Against Slavery website for everyone.
Great.
That would be the best idea.
Yes. How about the lady in the back first? Yes. Okay. And then. Well, you know, I actually do, I work very closely with my Polaris representative, and the next two slides is what we're going to be doing. A lot of what Polaris put out and we're working through is through the regular process. And as you know, in California, we have the thing called a budget crisis, right? And many organizations are aware of it, and when they introduce laws or when they propose laws, they keep that in mind, right? So what we're trying to put in the initiative are stuff that will never get through on a regular, in the regular channel, because of the politics involved, or because of the politics involved, and because of the money involved. So many of the ideas that Polaris, and we're working with Polaris, we're actually doing it through the lobbying our lawmakers to do. And I can speak with you more. We are working very closely with our lawmakers on other laws, and they already told us that what we're trying to do, never going to get passed.
I have a similar question. What exactly is the bill you're proposing?
Yeah. Well, why don't you just dive into that? How about that? Okay, let's do it. All right, so the first thing we're trying to do is to do prevention and prosecution. All right, the risk, so driven by greed, which is because there's so much money involved, and enabled by weak laws, right? So it's the risk, the balance between the risk and the reward, right? So we're going to try to tilt that this other way, right? All right, so what we did is we're doing an increase in the fines in the jail sentencing. So the fines is, currently, the penalty for human trafficking in California is 3 to 5 years if the victim is an adult, and 4 to 8 years if the victim is a minor, which is less than any other crime, similar crimes in the same book, like rape. So basically, if you get raped once, the rapist actually gets more jail time than if you're a trafficker and the girl gets raped 20 times by 20 different men over many months, right? So, which of course doesn't make sense to me. And so what we're trying to do is increase that to up to life in prison. So depending on what the age of the victim and the type of crime, right, whether it's labor or whether it's sex trafficking. And the other thing that we've done is, and we worked very closely with our DAs on this initiative, is that we want to remove the need to show force to prove that a child was trafficked, which is ridiculous. And yes, that we have to do this, but currently, you have to show scars, you know, you basically have to show that she was being trafficked, and she has to testify, and she has to prove that she was being trafficked, right? So we're trying to remove that.
Why would you separate a person that's labor trafficked from the sex? If a person loses their life, and that's what it is, and they come out destroyed, their whole family's destroyed, why wouldn't it be just life sentence for all of them? Anybody that takes away another person's life, viable life, as far as they're going to live a happy life after they get home, no, they're destroyed. If they go into
That's taking a life. Maybe they're still breathing, but they're not living. So
yeah. Oh, okay. So the question is, why should we have a lighter sentence for labor trafficking than sex trafficking? Or any where should there be different tiers? Now, the one thing is we actually do look at the federal law to when we do these sentencing, because the federal law is actually much more progressive than our state law. So that's one thing. And so the federal law does do that. They do separate the different types of trafficking. The other thing is, you know, sex trafficking involves, it's also consistent with our current type of laws, right, in our book. If you, sex laws have carry a higher penalty in our current book and penal codes than if you do labor or different types of crimes. So it's consistent with what we have currently as well. And I do agree with you, there are different, now it is very, The mental state that a victim is in is very, you know, it's the control, right, that you have to get over. But I think there is argument that the severity is different. Sorry. I hope that answers your question, but you can talk to me afterwards too. The second thing that we did was we increased all the fines. Let me go back. Currently, there's no fine in human trafficking law per se. So you have got to tack on other crimes, right? So that's the other thing is that in terms of labor trafficking is that if it's a forced labor, you get let's say what we have is the mid is 8 years, right? But if this woman is sexually assaulted, then you go in sexual assault law crime on top of that. So you do layer, right? Versus sex trafficking. The crime is forcing this person to be raped, right? So you see the difference? So you can't tag on another sexual assault in of that because it's already there. So there's no fine before in the human trafficking law per se. So usually you tag on the pimping crime or something like that to get the fines out of them. Through Chelsea's law, which you guys have heard of Chelsea's law. We actually worked with Assembly Member Nathan Fletcher to put a provision to increase the penalty for child sex trafficking to $100,000. So that's the first time, but you guys probably haven't heard of it because it went through a regular bill, which most citizens don't pay attention to unless you're a lobbyist. What we want to do is to increase all fines to $500,000. In addition to that, to tack on an up to $1 million of discretionary fine that the judge can put on. The reason is it's a business, and we need to find it like a business. And this, in addition to that, we also will add sex trafficking as a sex offender registerable offense in our book. 70% of the money that's collected will go to community services for safe homes, counseling, and prevention programs. And 30% will go to police officer prosecution programs to prevent and prosecute these crimes. In addition, the last thing is mandatory law enforcement training for this. We need more people like Sam on our streets because they're the ones touching these victims. And like he said, if there are more of people like him who can catch who can rescue these girls before they become seasoned. That's what we want to do, right? All right, I'm going to start to wrap up. So who was in the Bay Area about 11 years ago now, when this whole case in Berkeley broke out about an Indian millionaire who was trafficking victims from his town in India? All right, so do you guys know where he is right now? So we have J.O. India. He actually is living in Berkeley in his nice mansion. Yes, he was released in 2008. He got 8 years in prison for what he did. You know, one death, one suffocated, almost to death, right, that he was trying to bury. Anyway, let's not...
No.
Yeah. If it, you know, if it was me or someone I love, I don't know what I would do. So So, you know, why, what happened? We had such a, what happened to the public outrage, right? We had a, it was really big in the news. Yeah, it was not. I had to search. Yeah, I had to search for it to find out what happened to him. He's a registered sex offender, but you know, he's got millions of dollars. He still has his restaurants are still in business. His real estate business is still flourishing, so it's not. So what I have to reflect on myself too, right? It's like what happened? Like how was I'm part of the public outcry, right? So what happened to me? Right? Why has it been out of the radar and whole human trafficking is flourishing still, even though we had this huge case? In fact, it's even, you know, it's worse now than it was a decade ago after this case broke out. So I think my initial response was, yeah, this is such a horrible crime. It was horrific. I was appalled by it. But it was an isolated incident. That's what how my response was, right? And I think this is what the mentality of a lot of people are. If there's a case, it's an isolated incident, right? Otherwise, it's not happening in my backyard. And that's what we're trying to do with California Against Slavery is to break that mentality and to create not just laws, because we don't want this an eight-year sentence for such a crime, because you know what? He's probably doing it again, right? He's still got millions of dollars to dispose. And so we really need you to get involved because, like I said, this is a huge under effort. It's ambitious, but it's practical and it's doable. And you can make a real difference. You can do it. I was sitting where you were 2 years ago. And, you know, and when I just felt like, you know, this is God's calling in my life and I have to do something about it. So here I'm supposed to give you three things you can do. Right, from this workshop. So the first one is to exercise your freedom by lobbying and participating in lobbying. And if you join our mailing list, we occasionally do ask you to call, to write, and to just make a lot of noise in Sacramento. And Rosario back there, Michelle Downing back there, is our regional director from Sacramento area, and she has been shaking up Sacramento like crazy. She's doing a terrific job. We just got so much attention, even though we've only been around for a year, year and some months, right? We have passed bills, right? We have passed two provisions to increase the human trafficking issue, and then we have gotten so much attention in Sacramento because of Rosario's work there. So the first thing is to exercise your freedom. The second one is to become a supporter of California Against Slavery. We need $1 million to get this on the ballot. So you can donate through our website. You can pick up a yellow card down there and donate. And with it, you get this beautiful yellow button that says Member of California Against Slavery, which you can put on your purse, on yourself, on your dog tag. And the last thing, you could do fundraising, right? For instance, you could do a 10 for 10, which is ask 10 friends to donate $10 for this cause. So we also have more information on our website about this, too. All right, so now it's your time to quiz us. And you guys did a great job. Yes?
Well, the biggest thing is, want me to repeat the question? On
you
what?
Get the mic, that way we get recorded.
Ah, yeah. Want to come in up here and repeat that for me? I'm kidding. What can you do to help law enforcement? What can you do to help law enforcement bring it to light? One of the biggest things that I do with my colleagues as a law enforcement officer is to show them the kind of cases that I'm working and how easy it is. Because one of the biggest obstacles for us, back east it wasn't a big obstacle because my reports were that big, above victim was shot by above suspect. In the West Coast, my report, that same report is 8 pages long. So I was terrified when I came out here. So It's not that difficult. Once you get the steps to identify the victim, identify the crime, it's not a difficult case to investigate. The other thing is the areas that these crimes are occurring are right under our very noses, and it's just identifying as a public what you're driving by isn't just a normal massage parlor. And also realizing that not your victims aren't going to dress in scantily clad clothes and look the part that you see in the media or in the movies. They're going to be dressed fitting in with mainstream because they don't want to be contacted by PD. My track is in a residential area where everybody lives, and these people walk up and down the street looking like regular Joes, and unless you're looking for it, you're not going to see it. So awareness, and once you spot it, identify it to the law enforcement agency. Hey, this location, and hopefully if there are enough people come forward and say, this is a problem in my community, I don't want to see this in my community, we start taking action. You have to come to us in order for us to take action. And although we are aware of it, sometimes enough people come forward and say, I don't want this in my community, it'll get addressed, and the directive will come from administration down instead of me going up the ladder and say, hey, chief, because I don't want to be up on the third floor ever talking to the chief. It's just a fact of life. Patrol, we don't want to see those guys. Unless I'm jammed up or in trouble, that's the only time I'm up there. I'm just letting you know. It's a reality. He knows that if he listens to this. It's just a reality of patrol. We're so far separated. It's better if the directive comes from admin down to us and that directive's coming from, because we're here for you. We're the voice of the people per the Constitution of the United States of America, for the people of California. That's why I wear the uniform, for you. So when I'm out patrolling and I catch those bad guys, I'm your voice, because you're telling me you don't want it. That's why I'm doing it, not because I want to do it. I wouldn't be a police officer if I was dealing it with the problem my own way. I have to follow the law, right? We can't take the law into our own hands. That's why you have laws. We have to do it legally. And you guys can't go out there and talk to these girls because you're putting yourself in danger. Because they're working, you can't walk into the brothels. You can't approach these women because they're being watched by their guys and sometimes by other women. A pimp can be in New York City and have his victim in California, and she's working for him. So, and there's people watching her. So if you think you're going to get out of your car and go talk to a victim, be very careful, because you're entering a whole different world. I don't know if that answered your question or anybody's question.
One of the unique opportunities that we have, because we're trying to change the law, is that we are engaging the law enforcement associations. So we have been endorsed by the San Diego Police Officers Association, the National Latino Peace Officers Association. And then we're trying to get other associations. And as part of their endorsement, they have agreed to educate their members in partnership with us.
To add to that, that's why I handed those books out. It's because, again, I'm not a college kid, but I read a lot. And the biggest thing is if you know your enemy, and that's why the art of war is out there. If you know your enemy, you can win the battle. And it doesn't have to be by, bloodletting. Use your mind. Know your enemy. Know the pimpology. Know the tactics that they're using. Identify them. Show them, like she just showed that millionaire. Show them in the light. Take them out of the darkness. And that's the biggest thing, is why I put those books out there, is know your enemy. And then once you take away the market, which is predominantly us guys, you take away that market and you know your enemy, we don't have any more victims.
Yeah. All right, we have some other questions. The gentleman in the back, and then.
Why do you think that doesn't happen? An honest answer. Why do you think?
Because I haven't taken their picture yet.
Why do you think that it doesn't happen?
Who are the customers?
What? No.
John's in high places.
All right. He just said it. Your Johns are your. Look at the governor of New York City. Your Johns are your doctors, lawyers, and your regular Joes mixed in there.
But if you start shedding the spotlight onto Johns, you're going to start dragging in a lot of high-profile people. A lot of cities don't want that. A lot of the mainstream media doesn't want that. Movie stars, football players, doctors.
Let's bring it on.
If you start identifying those, if you start identifying those people, the reality is, like in one of my victims out there that read a card, she was assaulted by a police officer. So that's the reality of it. And you just have to say, so what? Let's identify the victims, and let's put them in the suspects, and let's put them in jail. I don't care who you are. You committed a crime, and you're going to jail. Period. But that's why there's a little apprehension of identifying the Johns. And that's me personally, what I think. And
haven't they done that in certain jurisdictions?
Some jurisdictions do. Some jurisdictions do. Who lives in Brentwood? Anybody from Brentwood? Brentwood?
Pleasanton.
I was at Mello's Pizza last night. I had like 6 to 7 slices of pizza last night. I'm getting my pizza, I'm walking in, I see the massage parlor. It's like 11 o'clock at night. Come on. Who's massaging at 11 o'clock at night? It's a massage. It's a brothel. Brentwood. If you're from Brentwood, right on Brentwood Boulevard at Oak, right by La Costa, right across the street from the Chevron near Liberty High School, there's a massage parlor there. Right a block away from high school, there's 2 more. They're all over the place in Brentwood.
But how do you know that they're bad ones? Because I go to a hell of
you know.
Well, if they open at 11
this
p.m.
How you identify it. This is how you identify it. At don't, without walking in. Without walking in. Without walking in. Without walking in. And putting yourself in danger. No legitimate business is going to have the blinds drawn.
Camera.
It's going to be dark, and there's going to be a little peephole.
Okay.
No legitimate business is going to have that. And no legitimate business is going to be open. That's a massage parlor to 12 or 1 o'clock at night. It's going to have people right next to a bar, and this guy's stumbling in there to get a massage. That's not legitimate. I mean, it's the reality. It's the way it is.
I'll tell you another place, Vietnamese coffee shops.
Yeah,
those
so...
You ever been to a Vietnamese coffee shop where the windows are black?
No.
You walk by in San Jose down on Story.
This is, I mean, the biggest thing, just not so it doesn't get all out of control, the biggest thing is the internet is a wealth of knowledge, okay? If you Google just about anything in your city, you're going to find it in your city.
Yeah.
And once you identify it, don't go there. Notify your law enforcement. And let them do the investigation. And if they didn't investigate it, call your friends. Call your friends' friends and let them know, hey, we're not going to tolerate this. Stop it. Because like I told you earlier, what does that brothel bring? Not just your normal Johns, if there's such a thing, but it brings your dangerous deviants into your community looking for victims and hunting for victims. So you don't want those guys in your community. You want to save those victims, and you want to identify your customer base. So it's out there. It's easy to do. Just like today, you're going to identify it.
Take a picture.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Everyone talks about decreasing demand. Are you guys doing anything, not just on the side for traffickers, but for Johns that are caught? Penalties or?
So for the Johns, right now, there's basically very little penalty for them. It's, in fact, if they ever, Sam, I was actually grilling him on this myself. It's very difficult to prove. You have to see them in the act because it's a misdemeanor, and it's difficult to do that unless you're undercover or something like that, right? So, and the most that they do get is like a citation, a fine, but your speeding ticket. So we are trying to do some. We didn't put this on the initiative because we think that it's a culture. We still think that men have a right to buy sex from anyone they want, and that's an unfortunate truth. If we put this on the initiative, it'll get killed just because of that. We are trying to educate with Rosario back there. We are trying to educate our lawmakers about the issue and to slowly helping them to understand the importance of cutting off demand. And with little things like someone mentioned exposing their names, we're trying to work at a higher fine. Right now, the fine is maybe $1,000, right? Which My speeding ticket last time here, my actually, red light ticket last time was, I don't speed. I mean, was almost $500, right? I mean, it's insane.
Oh, look
okay,
at,
Rosario has a comment.
Go ahead.
So let me repeat what Rosario. Let me.
I think this is an area where you can start with the underage bill. Like Mothers Against Drunk Driving. There was a time when there was a lot of sympathy for drunk drivers, and that changed. I think you can change the sympathy with the underage bill.
Yeah. Actually,
so
Swanson. Let me repeat what, let me repeat this. So actually, so just to the point, Sandra Swanson, assemblyman, he actually is introducing a bill that would increase the fines for sex trafficking of a minor to $25,000. We're trying to get one that's actually for anybody. It's not just minors, but yeah, there is. But what, for people who are recording, I didn't hear what Rosario said. So the question was, you know, there may not be sympathy for John's. I mean, there may be sympathy for John's soliciting sex from adult, but there shouldn't be any sympathy for John's soliciting sex from a minor. And Rosario's point was that, you know, Lawrence Taylor is a great example, right? 16-year-old beaten, picking his room, and he got 6 months of probation, and and he has to be registered as a sex offender. But here's the thing, when we were reading the Yahoo News comments, most people were so sympathetic to us, saying, poor guy, I can't believe they're doing this to you. I can't believe they're putting you on the sex offender list. I was so outraged, I had to make comments. I mean, I put 10 comments down there because I was so outraged by the sympathy of that. Seriously, men saying, so I feel so bad for this guy. People are like picking on him because he's famous. Hello?
Excuse me?
Who's picking on whom? And so that's the point. But Zari also said, you know, we have to support the cause, and you know, while we're trying to pull these victims out, we want to try to pull these victims out ourselves. That's probably not a very safe way to do it. But by supporting our cause and people, you know, other organizations like us, that we can make a difference. There was another. Oh yes.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do you break through the barrier of people who say, I don't want to hear about this horrific issue that's happening? You know, I first of all, it's, most of our news are bad news, right? I mean, my friend who did journalism said that if you do if the news, if the 10 o'clock news changes everything to all good news, no one's going to be looking, viewing it, right? But the second thing is, you know, when we communicate this, and this is something I'm learning, because as this is my first time doing anything activist, right, is you have to bring hope to this, right? Yeah, this is a horrible issue, but you can do something about it. There is hope. We can turn this around. If we could abolish slavery 150 years ago, when it was the big, it was like the internet industry of that time, right? It was the biggest industry of that time. We can abolish it now when with a consensus. A consensus that this is something that is we should not tolerate and has no place in our modern society and economy. So I think if you can twist it and say, you know what, it's a horrible issue, but we can do something about it and we can change.
If your friends are using the internet, regardless of what social economic status they're in, what race, if your friends have children that are using the internet, if your friends have children that go to the mall, if your friends have children that take trips, if your friends have children that go out, they need to be aware. Because there's people out there that are, that's all they do. They recruit. They have women that recruit. They have other children that recruit. Just real quick, I'm not going to take too much time, but I had a case a couple of years ago. Young child met a boy on the internet. She felt safe with him because she met him and he was a boy, her age, 14, 15 years old. She's doing it behind mom's back. Obviously, meets him at a park. This young child meets this boy, feels comfortable now. His uncle shows up in a car with a baby in the car. He goes, come on, he's going to take you home. And she doesn't feel comfortable, but she sees a baby. He's her age, so she feels cool. What happens? She gets in a car against her better judgment, but she feels safe because there's a baby, boy her age. He takes her, drops off the baby, and they take her to an isolated area, and that boy and that uncle brutally raped her. I got that case. I investigated. They're both in jail. The dad, the uncle decided to fight the case, and he got something to life. And the boy got transplanted someplace else. But if they have children, and if they have the internet, and if they have friends, they're potentially going to get recruited at some point or approached at some point. Your high schools, there's girls in there now, there's victims in there now that are recruiting. Your foster homes, there's victims in there now recruiting other people. These guys are ruthless. And if you have friends, you have to break it down to them. Say, hey man, we're all possibly going to get involved in this life.
Suggest GPS. My daughter has
GPS. Go ahead. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So they're actually, so that's one of the biggest issue, right? And that's why Donna is here. And there's safe homes. There aren't that many. I mean, first of all, this is a very brand new issue, right? Before this, these victims, they're the criminals, right? So there aren't that many safe homes, but there are some groups like New Day for Children that are trying to create services and safe homes for these children. But you're right, I mean, there aren't that many. And there's actually many different organizations here doing that, like there's Missy in Oakland. So maybe you can talk to Donna after this.
Missy, Jem, Sage, this organization, they're all out there. Yeah. Just reach out to them.
We're going to wrap up here because of the time. So I'm going to be around. Sam's going to be around. So you guys are welcome to come and talk to us. And don't forget to visit our table in the back. All right, thank you.
Thank you.